Hello, my name is Mike Diedrich, and I'm with Veterans for Peace Daniel Ellsberg, Chapter 92 in Seattle. And with me today to talk about Palestine, Gaza, and related issues are Khaled and God, I'm your name again. I'm sorry. Or do you?
Bisan, Bisan.
Bissan. And they're with Nidal, which is a Palestinian activist organization, if that's correct. Or this program will be broadcast on KODX 96.9 FM, and that's usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. You can access the programming there on just going to KODX 96.9 Programs Veterans for Peace. So I'm a Vietnam veteran, member of Veterans for Peace 92 here. Been a longtime member, and we've been doing this show for about 5 6 years now, and I want to thank you for coming on to the program and talking. So I'm gonna, without any further sort of comment on my part, I'll maybe some ask some questions. I'll let you guys go ahead and introduce yourself. And you're with Nidal, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah,
Okay.
that's right. So
And
I'll go ahead
so,
and
go ahead.
jump. Yeah, I'll go ahead and jump in here. So hi everyone, my name is Khaled Al-Asad. I'm with Nidal Seattle. Fundamentally, Nidal is a Palestinian liberation organization focused on building a culture of resistance right here, like the one back home. We as Nidal are part partner to a larger international movement allied for the liberation of Palestine and against US imperialism. That movement is called the Masar Badil. You can find out more about Nidal Seattle and the Masar Badil at Nidal's website, nidalseattle.com. That's NIDALseattle.com.
Yeah. And my name is Bisan Barghouti. I'm also a member of Nidal Seattle, and I'm a member of the executive committee of the Masar Badil, which is the Palestinian Alternative Revolutionary Path. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Mike.
Well, great. Why don't you do some sort of an introduction to or list of what are you currently involved in and what are your programs as far as activism? You can talk about internationally or just locally.
Yeah. I think locally, one of the things that we are very focused on that I think your audience might be well aware of as well, it's summer 2026. FIFA, the Soccer World Cup, the Football World Cup, is taking place right here in the United States. And that includes games being played in Seattle. Now, Nidal Seattle is part of a larger coalition of organizations called the Hands Off Iran Coalition. And the Hands Off Iran Coalition is working to put together what we're calling the People's Game or the People's Match. On June 26th at 6 p.m., we're going to be holding a sort of street tournament, football tournament right there next to the stadiums. We want all kinds of people to come out and join, to cheer participants, to play, form your own teams and play in 3v3 style, King of the Hill football. But the goal is to really, express love for the game of football while fighting the impacts of these, corrupt and neocolonial institutions like FIFA. One of the key messages we have is simply, kick Israel out of FIFA. Of course, sports fans, people who watch the Olympics, people who watch chess even might know that the international response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine is to completely demonize Russia and kick them out of all international sporting bodies, including the Olympics, including FIFA, including FIDE, the International Chess Federation. We're seeing committed by the Zionist entity called Israel the most atrocious war crimes, the most atrocious genocide of our brothers and sisters in Gaza since October 7th, 2023. Ethnic cleansing and genocide in Lebanon, aggression all over the Middle East, overt and covert. And yet Israel does not get ostracized by these same institutions. And that is largely due to institutional capture by imperialist and Zionist, political elements.
Well, I think these institutions are actually used as a form of coercion for the US Empire and its Western allies as well. So it's really important for us to be able to take action against FIFA because it is just it's important to let people know that sports are actually they belong to the people and
That's
they
right.
do not belong to corrupt institutions like those of the Epstein class. And FIFA has had a negative and violent impact on many corners of the world since its inception, and has displaced local communities, from having its president on the so-called Board of Peace, in
Yeah,
Palestine.
let's elaborate that. So what is the Board of Peace? The quote unquote Board of Peace, the horrifically titled Board of Peace.
Yes, it's really a theatrical kind of organization of imperialists and Zionists who are really looking to continue the genocide in Gaza, but under the guise of the banner of peace or the banner of so-called international law, which has really been exposed for what it is before our eyes. It has been a tool of US imperialism and Western settler colonialism for as long as they have existed.
And I think nothing demonstrates this more than this artifact that exists out there now. I really want to share this with your listeners, Mike. I encourage you all to go to the website boycottfifa.org. That's boycottfifa.org. Prominently featured on this website is a video, an AI-generated video put out by FIFA itself, depicting a FIFA stadium being built on top of the rubble in Gaza. Very transparent neo-colonial land grab, trying to pose construction of stadiums on top of the massive destruction of civilian infrastructure committed by the Zionist entity in Gaza as some kind of humanitarian relief effort, all while flying the flag of the Trump-constructed Board of Peace, whose intentions are simply to colonize Gaza and to reap the fruits of the destruction that Israel has sowed for the colonialists and the imperialists.
Well,
This is.
as a piece of propaganda, that is astonishingly cheeky, to say the least, to say, I mean, it's going to be built on the rubble and the bodies of Palestinians.
It's so transparent, Mike. If you watch the video, it is literally destroyed buildings, and you see the FIFA stadium pop out of it, and you have this AI narrator speaking over it like it's some glorious thing, performatively using the image of sport to justify genocide. And of course, what do we expect? This is the same organization that last year gave Trump the FIFA Peace Prize. They made up the FIFA Peace Prize to soothe Trump's psychotic aging ego because he did not get his Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, the whole thing is such a spectacle of fervent support and propaganda for imperialism, violent imperialism and colonialism. And it's directly partner to the genocide of Gaza. In this way. And they're really not ashamed about it. Like you said, it's cheeky. It's extremely transparent. It's
When you say Heza, is that actually a Arabic pronunciation of Gaza?
Yes. Gaza is how we say Gaza. Yeah, that's correct. And I'll use those terms interchangeably. You might be
Okay,
hearing
sure, great.
Lebanon or something like that, Palestine for Palestine. A bit of a language lesson for your audience. But yeah, so to bring it all back though to the People's Match, so the Hands Off Iran Coalition is putting together this People's Game to protest the impacts of FIFA, to protest its participation and partnership in genocide and colonialism, and to bring football back to the people in a fun way. So we'd love any one of your listeners, we'd love to have you out there. Please come down to the stadiums on the day of the Iran-Egypt game on June 26th at 6 p.m. You won't miss it. Just look and listen for the Palestine flags, for the chants and the cheers. This is a people's tournament. Anyone is welcome. Put together a team, call up your old friend and say, hey, man, we haven't kicked the soccer ball around in a while, but it's time we take the streets. We'd love to have everyone there. We want to make this a really
Is the Iranian Egyptian match is going to be in Seattle?
That's correct, on June 26th.
Wow, okay. Very great. Yeah, that's very you can't be this whole thing defines timely as far as what's happening right now. That FIFA is engaging in this sort of propaganda is just unbelievably outrageous. I can't believe that there's going to be, I mean, not just Palestinian or associate supporters of the Palestinian cause going to be objecting to it, but I mean, there'll be should be some I mean some sort of international objection to this sort of.
At first glance, it is baffling to think about this level of complicity, right? We think like, oh, we should be seeing fair play and sportsmanship, etc. But the reality is, these are imperial institutions. They're going to reflect the will of the empire, and they're going to export it globally, and they're going to disseminate it internally to the minds of people here. The same thing is true of our corporations and our academic institutions, etc. We live in the core of the American empire,
Yeah.
and every institution associated with it is imperial as a result. When you look at it that way, it's really not surprising at all. It's actually par for the course. And becoming a critical thinker and gaining awareness of, imperial machinations is, I think, key for attaining any sort of revolutionary consciousness or any sort of liberation politics. And so that's definitely like something that we should always be vigilant against, any sort
Yeah,
of.
I understand that, and I think many of my listeners would understand that too. But they actually putting a stadium on top of Gaza, destruction is pretty unbelievable that they'd actually think they could get away with this. Pretty arrogant, really, that they can say anything they want to and it's okay, and of course it's not okay. But that sort of arrogance is mind-boggling, really. Even by corporate imperialistic standards, unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that in the past there might have been more effort and energy put into caring about the guise of human rights and democracy and respect for life. But really, after Al-Aqsa flood has launched, we have seen the breaking of this kind of pathway in favor of something that is much more unmasked and in your face and kind of clearly exposed to all what their intentions are.
Because you cannot hide these war crimes. You cannot hide the character of a settler colony that will commit these kinds of crimes. I mean, we're talking about sniping nurses through hospital windows,
Yeah.
mass burial of civilians, using quadcopters to kill children, creating explosive disguised as food on a population of starving people who are starving because of the siege imposed on them. It's so blatant that the mask has come all the way off. And Americans who are conditioned actually to accept a pretty egregious level of violence, I remember like growing up, I'm 29 years old. I grew up in the post 9/11 world. I grew up on video games depicting violence in the Middle East, the Call of Duty series, etc. We, especially in the Obama years, with Obama as like a statesman, he sold the world these wars and these drone strikes, and we normalized to it. And so even our population, which is so normalized to that kind of violence and killing abroad, was shocked by what you rightly call extremely arrogant violence by the Israelis. And that arrogance, I mean, there fundamentally is a level of insanity in the Zionist and the Israeli existence and mindset to think that you can come to a land and massacre people, and by acts of massacre and terror and barbaric destruction of life and land, that you can create some kind of peaceful existence out of that. To think that you can impose apartheid and occupation on people while pretending that you're a democracy It's a total rejection of reality, but the people who live there, the Israelis and Zionists who live there, fundamentally accept it. So they accept a break with reality, and that, in my opinion, is complete insanity.
Well, they
It is.
don't have us to resist, you know what I mean? With all of this oppression and the expectation for the people that belong to that actual land to be steadfast in their resistance after almost 8 decades of ethnic cleansing, of occupation, of Zionism, of imprisonment, of torture, of stealing, you know, land and houses and all of these things. It goes back to how resistant and steadfast the people of the Arab region are, really, especially for these last 3 years, for actually exposing much of what the US empire is really all about.
Well, I think that the American public opinion has moved moved a bit since
Oh.
the Israelis are, murdered basically 75,000 at least people, and but also sort of the recent war or ongoing war with the Iranians and that sort of thing, and Americans can't even bother to apologize for killing 160 or 170 school children, even though it was clearly our weapons that did this.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, what sort of a support or sort of commentary do you get from other either Arab countries in particular, Muslim countries, and or are there, in the second place, are there any Palestinians playing on FIFA for FIFA teams?
Can you elaborate a bit more on the first question there? You're saying
Well, you know,
specifically.
it's what sort of a Arab or Muslim support do you get for Palestinian issues? Public.
Well, I mean, in the general sense, or in the
Well,
Nidal sense, because in the general sense, you know, you look at the Arab region and you're able to see a great deal of Arab governments, or we can call them reactionary regimes, that
yeah.
are in direct complicity and collaboration with the Zionists and with the US empire. And so they have been serving those needs, like in countries such as the UAE, Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait. These governments, the ruling classes, let's say,
Yeah.
of these governments have these particular interests that are completely aligned with American imperialism and Zionism.
And with the
And
American petrodollar and with the Epstein class.
we see and you know, we've actually been able to expose so much of their complicity through this last US aggression on Iran, because they are holding military bases on their lands that actually enable the US to refuel its carriers, to enact complete like airstrikes and bombardments on the region, to be able to surveil and monitor all the things that are happening in the region, and also to be able to use that military base as a form of political and social and economic investment into that country. And so they try to create those kinds of economic dependencies with these regimes. But then but the feelings and the sentiments of the populations of these countries is vastly different to what their governments are doing. And but we also see the steadfastness and the solidarity and the support of our resistance forces in the region. We see Hezbollah in Lebanon, Ansarullah in Yemen. We see the popular mobilization forces in Iraq, and we also see the heroic IRGC forces in Iran. And so
And let's
we.
not forget all the resistance factions in Gaza resisting
Yes. Oh, sorry. I
Hamas.
was
So,
talking about, yeah,
yeah,
that
but
solidarity with Palestine. But yes, of course. And this is the center of it all. It is Gaza who is the center. It is Palestine who is the compass, and it is Al-Aqsa who we are primarily trying to liberate. And these resistance forces are acting in coordination because they are all aligned on the need for their own sovereignty and their liberation and their self-determination. And so this is the cost that the US empire is imposing on us to be able to gain our liberation. But you're a Vietnam vet, so you understand, you know, like, you know, the the amount of people you kill is not directly related to your ability to win.
Absolutely. So is Hamas still playing any sort of a role in Gaza, in resistance? I mean, they're still there, as in my understanding.
Yeah. So, one of the goals that Israel publicly espoused at the beginning of the
Genocide.
response, at the beginning of the response to Al-Aqsa Flood, the genocide that they waged in Gaza, is to destroy Hamas, which is an extremely broad goal, because of course Hamas is the political party that is governing Gaza. So we're talking about destroying the government. This is not just, the military wing of Hamas, which is the Al-Qassam Brigades. This is the government as a whole. But after 2 years of war, there's, admissions by the Israeli security establishment, like, we have not seen a reduction in, and they use the term Hamas again, but in the resistance's ability to wage war. And one of the key reasons for that is simply the, really, I mean, the military genius of,
Netanyahu.
within the constraints of the long blockade of Gaza since 2006, to be able to create the means to manufacture your own weapons for resistance, so you can wage war, and to engineer weapons that can penetrate, the multi-million-dollar Merkava tanks and their reactive armor, et cetera. That kind of genius and creativity and diligence and persistence to be able to produce that within the confines of Gaza, within the constraints of living under this blockade and this siege, of course, is going to lead to tremendous military might for the resistance that Israel cannot bomb out of existence. And so, what does Israel do as a result? It's what they call the Dahiya Doctrine, the Dahiya Doctrine. Okay, this is named after the Beirut, the quarter in
Suburbs.
the suburb in Beirut, the Dahiya that Israel bombed relentlessly in the July 2006 war with Lebanon, punishing and targeting the civilian population because they cannot achieve any sort of military victory against the resistance.
There's also, and I think that the objective that Khaled mentioned in terms of trying to obliterate Hamas, which is, I think it also very much speaks to the kinds of delusions that Zionists have amongst themselves and their own kind of narratives, because Hamas is fundamentally the people. It is the people who, it is Palestinians in Gaza and it is Palestinians in Palestine, right? It is an idea, an idea that you cannot kill, an idea that you can, an idea that you can resist your own oppression and that you can liberate yourself and that you can achieve sovereignty and self-determination, because Hamas is fundamentally something that grew out of siege and sanction and occupation. And so they are a political party, yes, but they are also part of the fabric of every institution in Gaza, in terms of the educational institutions, the social welfare institutions, the financial institutions, and so on. And so, they have this idea that if you kill Hamas, you'll kill the will of the Palestinian people to resist their own occupation, which is just a fundamental impossibility.
Yeah.
And to bring it to the present day, currently we have in Gaza another classic fake ceasefire, an Israeli ceasefire, and you cease, I fire, as someone recently put it to me, which is what we're seeing in Gaza. I mean, bombardment every day, people are being killed every day in Gaza by the Israeli occupation. While the resistance has implemented every item of phase one of the ceasefire agreement. So you achieve a ceasefire agreement, you commit to it, the resistance repeatedly in history upholds its parts of the agreement, and the Israeli occupation violates it, does not uphold its part, continues bombing. They've established this yellow line and are demolishing homes outside of the yellow line freely, and are steadily advancing this so-called yellow line to choke off Gaza even more. I mean, just like, this is one instance, but it just shows a larger pattern that the exploiters and the thieves and the liars are the Zionists, the honest party, the defensive party, the resisting party, is the indigenous population and their resistance movements. So that's where we are today. And it's under that context of artificial ceasefire, of murderous duplicity, and of silence by the international community, of course, right? Because where are we now? Everyone's talking about Iran, but who's talking about Gaza? Gaza is still offering martyrs because the Zionists are still committing massacres there. Children are still finding explosives labeled as food and being murdered by these booby traps. The Zionist aggression in Gaza is not over.
Yeah, except you don't hear it discussed it re almost at all in the Western press. That's certainly. How about press organizations like Al Jazeera? I've looked at them, and I sort of looked at them and their reporting of the Middle East, but also look at the Israeli newspapers in particular, several Jerusalem Post, and they don't mention it at all. They don't, there's no discussion of what's happening in Gaza at all. But Al Jazeera does somewhat. But I mean, as far as I can tell, from my limited point of view, they are one of the few organizations that has any sort of pretense about covering the Middle East accurately. So what's your opinion of that sort of a their organization and what they do is as far as talking about the war or the
I would
wars.
challenge statements of accuracy about Al Jazeera for a bunch of reasons, but what do you have there, Bisan?
Yeah, I would say that it's important to put this in the perspective of, let's see. Like it's important to understand that the media and the narratives that is kind of exported onto the rest of the world are fundamentally these like very Zionist and imperialist platforms. It's very difficult to find alternative platforms that are discussing the nature of events from the perspective of resistance, from the perspective of people struggling, and from the perspective of kind of like fighting the oppression that comes with settler colonialism and Zionism and imperialism. And so given the fact that our current environment is very limited in terms of the kind of information that you can find that is accurately representing things rather than trying to paint a picture that is coming just from empire's side, we have to be careful to understand where our sources come from and who is, like, you know, there are human beings behind newspapers and television stations and camera, you know, camera screens that are reporting on things. And so in the case of Al Jazeera, I think they typically they are an institution that is directly funded by and connected to the government in Qatar. And the government in Qatar is a direct supporter of Zionism and American imperialism. And so directly co collaborates with them and their strategic goals within our region. And so Al Jazeera can also express the sentiments of these kinds of governments and outlets, albeit in a way that kind of touches the people of the region, because the people of the region are very pro-Palestine and are very adamant about the liberation and the sovereignty of our lands. And so I'm not saying that there's not accurate reporting in Al Jazeera, but also we also have to understand the kinds of intentions behind these platforms, because these platforms are funded by human beings and by institutions and by interests. And so we can look on, like, for example, Hezbollah has a or is it? I don't know if it's exactly Hezbollah, but I know it's a Lebanese platform called Al-Mayadeen. And I look to them a lot for reporting on the region and what is happening, especially in Gaza and in the West Bank, which is completely not being reported on. And this is the purpose for them. It's to erase us, and not just, you know, physically, but also ideologically. To erase us in your mind from being able to think about us as human beings who are continuously sacrificing, who are continuously giving blood for the liberation of their land, and for the way that also the Zionist entity is treating Palestinians in the West Bank. You know, there are over 13,000 Palestinian prisoners sitting in Zionist jails right now. And the amount of torture and rape and abuse and humiliation that our prisoners are currently facing is just unspeakable, unspeakable. You know, and they are not even giving them enough clothes to be warm at night, enough hygiene products not to get like an infection in your mouth from not being able to brush your teeth. It's just, it's really just the lowest, most degrading and violent, disgusting thing that an entity can do.
And
So
on
this Lebanese entity, is that a news entity or organization? Are there any? I mean,
The one that Bissan mentioned is El Mayadeen. That's ALMA.
MAYADEEN.
Uh,
You would consider
and
that to be a little bit more forthright or honest about describing Middle East, the Middle East.
Yes. And also, actually, I should really mention really quickly is Al Mayadeen is an Arabic outlet. So, but they do have an English platform. They do have an English website called Al Mayadeen English. And I'd be happy to give you a bunch of other resources that are in the English language as well, because those are also difficult to find. It's much easier to find revolutionary outlets in other languages, but not English.
Yeah,
On
no,
the
that
topic
would be
of
useful for this particular program to have the list or enumerate some of those outlets
absolutely.
on the topic of Al Jazeera, I just want to say, we were talking earlier about like Arab regimes, reactionary Arab regimes, and this term has come up, the GCC, the Gulf Coast countries, right? These countries that are aligned with US imperialism that have gone the path of economic partnership with the United States Empire to help it to achieve its imperial aims. They host its bases on their soil.
Actually, the largest US base that exists in the Arab region is in Qatar. It's
Right.
called the Udaid base.
And they participate in America's wars of aggression in the Middle East in that way. So then having these nations have, media arms like Al Jazeera, it's really unsurprising to see that they do a lot of imperial propaganda for the empire. I can give a strong example of this. When the aggression against Iran started in February of this year, I remember watching Al Jazeera, and I'm going to paint a picture for your listeners. Okay, the view that's shown on the TV screen is divided into a 3x3 grid with nine cells, and the middle video cell is a feed of US strikes on Iranian targets. Okay, and it's these thermal black and white images, or otherwise just black and white visible light images of supposedly Iranian missile launcher trucks being struck repeatedly. And it's a 2-minute video segment that's repeated ad nauseum. And they might switch in a commentator in a different cell and show a different live feed on the periphery. But what Al Jazeera repeats centrally to its audience is a display of quote unquote US force. It's the same 90-second to 2-minute clip repeated ad nauseum. Okay. So that alone is a way to try to put in the to impress to get to create an impression in the minds of their audience that America has strong military capabilities. That is exactly the kind of impression that America wants to project on Arab populations. And so in reporting just in that way, they help to create this impression among
I
the
think
people there.
part of the goal, I think Khalid is exactly right, because part of the goal is to instill a sense of defeat in the Arab population, and to kind of break their spirit and be able to break their will to resist. And this is something that we largely see in the treatment of our prisoners, for sure. But I think also something that Al Jazeera has done is to kind of sow a mistrust of the fundamental players in the axis of resistance, those who are actually sacrificing the most for our liberation and our sovereignty.
Exactly. And
And
it's not always
so,
so outright as like American media. Like American media will
no.
use the terror tagging tactic. Oh, these are terrorists, you know. But
Yes.
then for Arab audiences, Arab or imperially aligned Arab media will be more cunning and duplicitous and sow doubt here and there.
Yes.
And keep in mind, by the way, there is accurate programming or impressive programming even that comes out of Al Jazeera. Like I remember watching the What's Hidden is Greater segment on Al-Aqsa Flood. They did a documentary on the Al-Aqsa Flood operation of October 7th. Very informative, very like interesting, viewpoints that you don't really get in American mainstream media. But of course, in any situation where you have institutional media doing propaganda work and executing imperial will, the way to gain credibility in the minds of an audience is to do accurate reporting too. And it's not all lies, right? It's not all imperial propaganda. There is like you do have to have a
But I
critical
think,
mindset as an audience, as a viewer.
well, that plus there's a substantial number of Al Jazeera, mostly journalists, who have been killed in Gaza, and quite a few. I mean, like 100 or so,
Who are
or
doing
even.
some, yes, who are doing incredible work to kind of actually uplift what is actually happening on the ground in Gaza. And this is what they do to those who are telling the truth.
I want to emphasize something. So the Israelis massacre journalists. They target and massacre journalists and doctors and et cetera. Okay. But focusing on journalists, nothing is more terrifying for the Israeli consciousness or the Israeli society than for the world to gain awareness of what it really does. So they target mechanisms of spreading the truth. They target the camera and they target the journalist. And they'll violate any international regulations and laws to do so. And this is like this, I forgot where I was
They
going with this one.
recognize that the battle of narratives is one of the most important fronts of this war.
Oh, I remember Yair Lapid. Okay, he's the head of the opposition in the Israeli Knesset. Okay, so there's a lot of talk you'll hear, like people say, "Oh, Netanyahu's the problem." This is a very American mindset, by the way, is the decapitation thinking. Oh, it's one bad guy. It's not the whole society. It's not what. It's one bad guy. If we can just kill him, it'll be fine. So people, there are Americans who wake up to how evil Israel is, and then project all that evil onto just Netanyahu, instead of recognizing it as systemic and societal and foundational since its founding. Okay. So Yair Lapid is the political opposition, the leader of the opposition. And in 2023, very early days of the genocide, he had a quote where he made a statement, I'm paraphrasing slightly, if the media is objective, it serves Hamas. If the media shows the truth, it serves Hamas. He's directly, openly stating that media objectivity and presentation of the truth serves the resistance. This is a pretty like this is a moment of candor, really, because of course it's true. Anyone with eyes and a heart will see the crimes happening in Gaza and know which side is the oppressed and which side is the oppressor. The Israeli media establishment identifies this, or I guess the Israeli political establishment identifies this truth about the media. And so they work hard to kill, to identify, target, and kill journalists, to censor. We have all these tech companies in the United States, all these social media companies, Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, internally are implementing these community moderation policies that are preventing the truth from propagating properly. They will classify you as an individual. They will see they will they have algorithms to rank your individual political awareness. If you don't know about the conflict, if you are uninitiated to the facts of the genocide, they will hide those facts from your feed algorithmically. And if you are initiated to it and you know what's going on, they'll show you it. In fact, they'll inundate you with it. So all you see is massacres on your feed, so you get fatigued. So this is the kind of psychological operation that's happening against American populations and any population using these social media apps. And if you look at who's working in these companies, especially at the director, senior director, and vice president level. There are many Israelis throughout all these social media companies, all these tech companies, many of them, of course, Israel being a society that has conscription, we know,
Of
served in the
course, conscription.
IDF, and especially people with tech skills, sometimes they come from Unit 8200 or other Israeli intelligence arms. So these are Israeli intelligence agents working in high up decision-making positions in these social media companies, fighting the information war from that vector too. It's not just the murder of the journalist, it's the prevention of any artifacts the journalist produces from getting to the eyes of the consumer by putting yourself.
And of course, it's not just this country, but I mean, any sort of criticism of Israel or Zionism is met with says you're anti-Semitic. That's the sort of default sort of and I don't think that that argument is as widely accepted as it used to be. I mean, Americans do see what the Israelis are doing, and as far as that, I was a military intelligence in the United States Army for what it's worth, but I mean, the Israeli intelligence has a reputation, mostly deserved for fairly good intelligence, but they fucked this up really badly, along with the Americans, which do have actually good, generally speaking, pretty good intelligence, but they completely misread the Iranians completely. And the other thing is that, well, yeah, we can bomb them back into compliance with what we think they should be doing, and historically, bombing doesn't work at all. I mean, going back to, well, back to the First World War, really. And nobody, of course, the United States military is like a lot of militaries. They don't learn any lessons from the, they refight the last war. But I mean, and even in the mainstream media in this country, I've read reports about the Israeli and the American intelligence organizations, not just the political class there in both of, they badly fucked this up. I mean, it's not as if Iran is an open book or anything like that, but there are intelligence assets in the Middle East that both of the, I mean, it's shocking really how badly they bungled this.
I mean, like we can talk about arrogance, we can talk about whatever. There's other things too. Like in the United States military industrial complex, there is strong corporate incentive to lobby politicians to push for war. And I think we'll see this if you look at the news, right? After the memorandum recently, very recently, we had the memorandum of understanding signed between America and Iran. And you will see Democrat politicians attacking the decision by the Trump administration to engage in this memorandum of understanding with Iran. They will attack it from the right, from a war engineering perspective, representing their lobbying interests. So there is that mechanism too. I'm always wary of the narrative of like intelligence failure in the sense of it seems a way to sweep under the rug the system of engineering these conflicts and engineering these military contracts and establishing these foreign bases and having these mechanisms of force projection. The board of directors at Lockheed Martin is pushing for war, is thrilled to see
Yeah,
conflict with
absolutely true.
Iran. That is, it is not an intelligence failure
Well,
when
it's
there are ways.
intelligence failure in the sense that there are people in, well, American and Israeli intelligence, for example, that do know, that have good a pretty good grasp of what's happening. However, I was an intelligence analyst, and he says, well, you present the information that you have, and you present that, kick that up there. It says whether or not they accept your findings is another matter entirely. And it was vaguely true in spades in Vietnam, and it's true, I mean, Iraq and Afghanistan, Iraq particularly, glaringly so. There was good intelligence to indicate that the Iraqis didn't have WMDs, so they, I mean, that there's there are, militarily speaking, competent people. But whether or not that competence is accepted by the political corporate class is quite another thing. And you're absolutely right about saying that they're wagging the tail wagging the dog.
It's not like if the intelligence was accurate, it would be goodwilled. That's not true. It's not
No,
like if the intelligence was accurate, it would be making the decisions. That's not true either.
Yeah, but there is also just like a lot of arrogance and delusion that goes into thinking about us as a people. You know, they fundamentally misunderstand us, and you know, looking at Iran for the last almost 50 years of kind of remaining steadfast under some of the most severe economic sanctions that were levied upon it in the during these decades. I mean, when we're talking about economic sanctions, I feel like people also don't understand how violent and destructive these sanctions can be. You know, when you're unable to import the medicine, the life-saving medicine for your population, when you're unable to import parts for that are vital for kind of continuing in infrastructural projects or infrastructural plants that kind of are part of your you know, everyday life. And
We're
so
talking hundreds of thousands of preventable deaths by economic
hundreds of
policies of
thousands of
Iran's.
preventable deaths,
This
exactly.
is massacre by the United States against foreign
Yeah, and
populations.
that's not to mention all of the kind of like intelligence plots against them, the kind of like managed warfare, assassinations, surveillance gathering, like narrative building as well. So, and again, part of this narrative of like, you know, the beauty of the West and human rights and democracy, and we're open and we're liberal and these kinds of things, to kind of get the Iranian population to feel, well, wow, we are so squeezed economically, you know, and why can't we just, you know, normalize with the Zionists and normalize with the Westerners and be like, okay, we'll give you our land if you give us Gap and McDonald's and Starbucks and all of these things.
Well, that's not going to happen, I don't think. And as far as you know, a country like Qatar and other countries in Iran, they're rethinking, I think, their relationship with the United States, even though it's economically a huge benefit to them. But still, you know, the Americans actually, who are some of the Americans were in Qatar, they're living in hotels, something. They're not on their bases anymore because there were a dozen or so Americans killed. That's changed the dynamic. I mean, the whole thing with drones has changed, completely changed warfare, just completely.
Absolutely. And Iranian intelligence has shown itself to be extremely accurate. I mean, they were able
Yeah.
to find like hotel rooms where CIA and
Yeah.
American officials were staying, or not officials, sorry, military officers were staying,
Yeah.
and target them with Shahed drones as well during the confrontation, the Ramadan War this year. So yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely right to say like they're rethinking their alignment. It's still the case that they've taken that deal. They're strongly tied to the
But
economics.
also just like contrasting the fact that these American officials and those who are part of the ruling class or those who kind of work for them are consistently looking for ways to kind of hide and evade you know, the kind of accountability or confrontation, right? But like look at our resistance forces and the leaders of our resistance forces and contrast it with those of these American officials, where our leaders are walking in the streets with the people, you know, and they are not afraid of sacrificing their own lives and their own livelihoods for our freedom. And so how
Fighting on the
can
front line, commanders fighting on the front line and
commanders who are
dying on the front line.
Yes, and who are in the streets protesting with their people as well, you know? I mean, an American drone can very easily just find that person and assassinate them. But they know that this isn't what it's about, because there are going to be another 10, 20, 100 people that come after them to lead the struggle forward. You know, they are happy to sacrifice themselves and their blood for the greater cause. And so against this kind of mentality, you know, where death is also a victory for us, how is the West, even with all of its technology, with all of its surveillance, with all of its money and its power and its resources, going to fight against a population of people in the region who are saying, this is not going to stop until we win our freedom? And so it is in this circumstance, no matter what the West does with this kind of arrogance, these people are undefeatable, because it's not death that kills the struggle.
And I think like one of the things to talk about too, like the Epstein, quote unquote revelations, depending on who you ask and where, it's not so surprising, or it's very surprising, right? But we talked about, the resistance leaders on the front lines fighting and dying with their soldiers on the front lines. And where are the American leaders? They're partying with pedophiles on private islands, engaging in satanic crimes of blatant disregard of humanity. And Americans, foolishly will say that America is the land of the free, and that the Arab world is the one that has the problems. And when you talk to Arabs or about this, you'll like we look at the Epstein, just the Epstein situation alone, and it's completely like, I mean, it would be hilarious if it wasn't so disgusting, if it wasn't so violent. Here in America, the amount of debt you have to take on just to get an education, is disgraceful. And Americans will pay taxes that fund Israeli education and not know that they're funding Israeli college education. You get a broken leg, you get bit by a rattlesnake, you get to some sudden medical expenditure, you're looking at bankruptcy, you might lose your home, you're looking at homelessness, et cetera. While American tax dollars are funding Israeli healthcare, and making sure that Israelis can enjoy a stress-free medical experience, and then using the tax dollars to fund
Yeah,
bombs and bullets, et cetera.
it is truly outrageous. We're running out of, excuse me, running out of time here. So we can talk a little bit after the recordings, but the purposes of the recordings. So I want to thank Khalid and Nisan of Nidal for coming and making this presentation. It's very timely and very appropriate. So thank you very much. This is Mike Diedrich with Veterans for Peace Channel, or Chapter 92, Seattle, Daniel Ellsberg chapter.
I
Thank
just
you.
want to say thank you so much for having us. I want to remind your listeners, check out NidalSeattle.com, bookmark it, and check out the events calendar. Come out to our events. Check out boycottfifa.org. Learn about FIFA's complicity in genocide and kick Israel out of FIFA. Come to the People's Game on June 26th at 6 p.m. near the stadiums. And save the date. July 8th is the martyrdom anniversary of Hassan Kanafani, a Palestinian revolutionary. We have an event planned for that. So save the date and keep checking our website for more details about that event. Mike, it
Okay,
was really,
great.
really awesome to chat with you. Thank you
That's
so much.
a nice wrap up. Thanks a lot. So, this will be broadcast on KODX 96.9 FM, but also archived on Veterans Repeat or VFP92.org eventually. So, accessible to anybody with an electronic device. So, I'm going to sign off now, but thanks again for coming.
Thank
Thank you
you.
so much, Mike.
Free
Thanks for
Palestine.
having us.